podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
All this week on NBC4, new products to new technology. Susan Hogan is showing you how local restaurants are changing the way we dine in and take out in this new world. Tonight at 6.
A new twist on outdoor eating.
A lot of it is creating flexibility.
How one local restaurant is making their outdoor space mobile, giving you plenty of sunshine and social distance for a stress-free meal.
It's all part of restaurant revitalization. Tonight at 6 on NBC4, working for you.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets, tío. Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's. Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet-O-Fish y te llevas otro por $1. Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
Let's get away from we've done an error on the group stages, and there was really not to talk about it. But the knockout stage is where this tournament comes alive, and unlike the last two World Cups, this is one where there is genuine attacking play in the knockout phases. Teams are going for it. Right, the first half of the draw in the second round, there's goals all over the shop. The second half is a bit more cagier. But there's still great games that are involved in it. So I'll start. We've got Brazil, Chile, Nigeria, Denmark. We've Holland, Yugoslavia. We've Argentina, England, and that's the top half of the draw. Bottom half of the draw: Norway, France, Paraguay, Germany, Mexico, and Romania, Croatia. So Brazil, Chile. It's an absolute hockey in by Brazil against the Chile side. Yeah. You know, it's men versus boys when it comes to this. Chile were exciting getting out of group stages, but this is men versus boys. And it's when Ronaldo and Rivaldo start to light this tournament up. And it's a bit like Baggio coming alive in the second round in 94. The two boys just start to really kill the tournament at this stage. Right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, ultimately, they get to the final, but I guess they're just displaying now, aren't they, what they're really all about. Is Chile have missed the last couple of World Cups because they've been banned or whatnot?
Yeah.
So I guess from their point of view, getting out of the group stage was probably, you know, their goal and see where we go from there sort of thing. But, Ronaldo, I mean, that World Cup really was... You know, it was his World Cup, wasn't it? It was shaping up to be his World Cup. He scores two goals in that game. And then obviously we will get on to the final and whatnot. It was just a shame the way it all played out ultimately, because it really was looking like it was going to be his World Cup. And look, they smashed Chile 4-1. Chile never really got a sniff.
Ronaldo gets a hat trick in this game as well, so it's like he's. Oh, no, sorry, doesn't he?
No, yes, two.
San Paolo.
And Dunga's sitting at the bottom of that midfield. That's right. Leonardo is playing as well.
Yeah.
And I almost forget that Bebeto's is still playing this World Cup. Like, the mad thing that's going on.
He scored a couple of them, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but like, you just completely, because Rivaldo in this, you just forget that Bebeto, because he's the 94. Is swinging the baby is
swinging the baby.
Yeah. But like again, it was Chile were playing three at the back, so it's all, as you said, it's all Vogue at this stage. So, but yeah, am I right in thinking no? Salas did play in this game.
Yeah.
For a second, that Salas hadn't played in this match, but just looking at there, no, he did. Yeah, I just remember to me anyway. This was there was a real I remember the crowd had gone fully onto the Brazilian side. Outside the France games, it was like this is where it came alive, and it was that buzz when they played. And this was a late kickoff as well. This was a 9 o'clock kickoff in terms of what it was. And there's always that feeling, night game. It's a bit like, isn't it, the Anfield Magic? You know, the night game when Brazil are playing with the sound of the drums and the banging and all that type of stuff. This is when Brazil really seemed to turn up and play their matches. And this was an example of what it was. But before that, Italy had played that same day against Norway. What can only describe as, and I said to you a second ago, like the top half of the draw was better than the bottom half of the draw. This is Christian Vieri scoring in the 18th minute, and then Italy being Italians and just rocking up shop and saying, right, best of luck to you. And the Norwegian lads banging it from left full to centre forward, standing in the right channel, like head it onto some lad to come in and come to. Like Leon Eriksen play is in this. Bjarnaby, like, we actually have a genuine interest in this Norwegian team because you've got Bjarnaby, you've got Leon Eriksen now at this stage. We were linked loads of times with your man Havard Flo as well. Do you remember?
Flo,
yeah.
We were always being linked with him, and he was like the force to mail.
Yeah, but even from a Premier League, like you'd Ronnie Johnson and Henning Berg for the United side of it as well. Like very familiar. Thor Andre Flo was the big stock and a show up front for them. Like I said, they were quite a familiar team to be playing, but I think at the same time, you never expected Norway to do anything. Do you know what I mean? They played Egil Olsen as the manager there, and you know, he's just a hoofer. That's a hoofball merchant. They've ever those
doesn't
ones.
Doesn't he get the Wimbledon job after this World Cup? Yeah, like, that just shows you, like,
weddings and all, doesn't he?
He's perfected his long ball tactics.
Solskjaer actually comes off the
bench.
Off the bench, yeah.
Strange for Solskjaer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he knew something.
Yeah.
But it was one of them. Once Italy got a nose in front, you knew there was no chance of Norway doing anything. You know, they weren't an attacking team. They weren't a team, like we spoke earlier about all the creative sort of midfield players.
Mm.
Norway didn't have them. You know what I mean?
You look at this defence. There's Bergamy at right back, Cannavaro and Costa Corta at centre back, and there's Maldini at left back. Like, you're not breaking that down.
No.
There's no one breaking that down. It's just that simple. And strangely enough, Baggio doesn't start this game. This is Del Piero has taken over now as the number 10 at this point in time. Yeah. And you've got Di Biagio and Dino Baggio are the two centre mids with Albertini as well. So they're playing a 4-3-3. They're way ahead of their time at the stage. Right, so then the next game, next day, was France versus Paraguay. And this was one, and I remember this, I was really excited about this game because this is like Paraguay going up against the host nation. This is the host nation without Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah.
Right, and this was also, they started Henry in this game. There was loads of controversy in this World Cup because Henry and Trezeguet are only kids. They're only 20 and they're only ever coming through from Monaco. I think Henry's going to Inter Milan and fail miserably at this. Juventus, it was. You're right. Stefan Givash, who I think, has he gone from Marseille to Newcastle or goes to Newcastle?
I think after this he goes. Yeah.
After this. Givash was seen as the starting centre forward for the French team. And this game, they give Henri the start, but he's pulled out about 65 minutes and there's nothing between, there's literally nothing. There's a cigarette paper between these two teams for the whole thing, and it's because mainly there's no Zinedine Zidane. But I'll go back to the Steve McManaman show. They have nothing. You take Zidane out of this team and they became ordinary without a focus. Bernard Diomed, Liverpool legend. Plays in this game, that's true. Plays in this game as well. But again, Chilavert is absolutely brilliant. The one thing that stands out among them, he's pulling off saves all over the shop in this match, and it just goes right the way through. And it was a Larry White header in the end that puts France through. It was a golden goal.
Larry White. Wasn't it?
Larry White bangs in a golden goal. I think, was it the first golden goal in World Cup history?
Yeah, I think so.
It's the first golden goal, and it's scored again by Larry White, banging it in the top corner from a header. But when you look at this team, I remember going through the French squad and going, you've got Thuram, Larry White, Desailly, and Lizarazu. Like, all the top teams in this just have defences that are just immense. And yeah. it's like, geez, you can tell if you can build on that. And they've also got Petit and Deschamps sitting in the centre midfield. Like, there's nobody's coming through them. Nobody's coming through them whatsoever. Next game, Denmark and Nigeria. This is the Laudrup brothers. This is like Michael and Brian Laudrup managing to make it to a World Cup where they're both fit. Mm-hmm. They're both on the wrong side of their careers at this stage because Michael has gone back to Ajax. He's had his time at Barcelona and Real Madrid. But this was a brilliant Denmark team, and this is a really exciting Denmark team. We've got Schmeichel, who's approaching the peak of his powers at United as well. But the main thing is, Schmeichel is 34 in this World Cup. And he's 34. So you don't think of him being that old. Because 1999 is around the corner. But this is a smashing Danish team. But I think we all thought at this point that the attacking brilliance of the Nigerian sides are going to sweep away Denmark. And Denmark just turned up and played the most amazing football. And I remember being amazed by the two Laudrups that day. It was just like they were playing in complete synchronicity between the two of them.
Yeah, they were brilliant. Absolutely amazing.
You think about it, the two teams that get through the group at Spain's expense get dumped out straight away in the next round. They must have been going, they must have been going mad. They must have been absolutely sick, Paraguay and Nigeria both get through, and that's the end of their tournament in the next round sort of thing. I mean, that's sometimes, when you see these draws, you're in the World Cup and you get one of these kind of, I know it's a little bit different nowadays, but, back then, if you got one of these kind of, wild card kind of countries, you just don't want one of those in your group because they can turn it on, and ultimately that they're not going to really progress very far, but you don't want one of these wild card countries in your group, and that's what Nigeria ended up being, to Spain's expense.
But again, this Danish team just make a mockery of it and just pull them apart and destroy them. March into the quarterfinals. Next match will be up, we've got Germany against Mexico, and it's just your typical German oppressive football that just grinds Mexico into submission. There's nothing major about it. But I think the Mexico do go 1-0 up in this game. But Germany never looked like they were going to struggle. Even though if Liverpool go 1-0 down, you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, they're going to come back. You know what I mean? But in this, it's not. They just pile on and score two goals. Beerhoff gets one and Klinsmann gets one. So it's like the two names that stand around the next 20 years of German World Cup football that don't. Then you've got Holland against Yugoslavia, which is probably one of the best games of the second round of games you have.
Yeah.
You've got a mad Yugoslavian team, but you've got Mijatovic and you've got Stojkovic playing for this Yugoslav side.
Yeah.
You've got Petrovic as well, and you've got Mihailovic at centre back. They were like really, really good players. Yeah. Then, but for the Dutch team, it's like just a name of stars. You've got Sander, Reutiger, Japstam, Frank de Boer, Newman, David Seedorf, de Boer, Cocu, Overmars, and Bergkamp. You couldn't, and Gus Hiddink is the manager. If you're going to put a superstar team together, that is the superstar team, isn't it? There's to this day, you're just looking at every single one of them, and they're all known.
Well, it's easy to look at them, isn't it? And I know we started to touch on it earlier. The amount of infighting that used to happen at Holland at World Cups. You could have a team full of 22 stars and you knew they were just going to blow up. They just didn't have the minerals at all in the big tournaments. And whether it came down to race or whatever it came down to, you just knew they were always on the verge of just exploding within themselves.
Yeah, there was more. There always used to be more than the Dutch crowd. But then the next match, Holland cruise through, they're 2-1, it's like they were comfortable right the way through, even though the Yugoslavian team were a very impressive football outfit that was there. But the next game then is Romania and Croatia. Croatia come through, Davorsuker, again, it's the second round, that is starting to appear, it's always these names that start to appear and become talisman for the teams. But this is the Croatian side that sets up what's going to be a generation, and even a second generation and a third generation of Croatian teams. You've got Stimac, Simic, Bilic, Stanic, Jarni, Asanovic, Boban, Leovic, Zucker. They are all, again, household names at this stage. But
that's even without Prozinecki. Where the fuck's Prozinecki in this?
He was in the group stage. I think he was suspended for that game, was he?
I think he was suspended. A bit like Zidane, he was suspended for the game as well. But that was the end of that Romanian side. Because how do you come back for the next four? I don't think Hadji comes back at that stage.
I don't think he's got 23 in this World Cup. I'd be surprised.
That takes us on to the main event. England, there is only one game. The next match we'll deal with is Italy versus France. We'll come back to Argentina and England, and you've got Brazil versus Denmark. There's an argument that says those three games, Argentina versus England, Italy versus France, and Brazil versus Denmark, Holland versus Argentina, they're four of the greatest matches of all time in any World Cup. When you talk about the Holland-Argentina game, you could do a three-hour pod alone on that match. 2-1, and you've got that Bergkamp goal in the 90th minute. We're talking about two teams. Yeah. Kluivert scores in the 12th minute, Lopez in the 17th. It's end-to-end football. I watched back half of that game, and it's mad watching it, because you've got two total footballing sides going non-stop at each other and just taking pops all over the shop. You've got two goalkeepers playing out of the skin. You've got defenders making slide tackles and blocks all over the shop. You've got nothing between the sides.
Absolutely. Two teams of superstars, isn't it? I'm looking at the lineups there. It's unreal. The amount of star players in that game, it's peak of their power. It's ridiculous.
And then
that Bergkamp goal, lads, is outrageous. That touch is outrageous. It's like that one against Newcastle where he twirls around Andy O'Brien. And you know he's meant it. It's unbelievable. And he just plays in the bottom corner.
But this is what I'm talking about these four matches, because if somebody plays that goal and says nothing, you think France 98, right?
Yeah.
And I'll bring it back to the England game and Argentina. Michael Owen, the run and the goal, right? That happens. And if somebody plays that moment, that's all you think. You think France 98. You say, where were you when Michael Owen scored that goal? It was just incredible to watch. And when I look back at this, I completely forgot that it was already won all of that stage.
Yeah.
Bacastillo scores a penalty after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Shearer gets one after 9 minutes. It's almost like people have completely forgotten what happened in the lead up to that Michael Owen goal. Because the opening 20 minutes in that game was one of the most frantic 20 minutes I've ever seen in a football match, despite the two teams and the two defences that were in front of them. And it's mad. It's pure mad.
Is this the first time they've played since the 86 World Cup?
I think it is.
Yeah, it would be.
I suppose the Falkland stuff was all clouding over the 86 game. Then you had the Hand of God.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time there was loads of animosity in around this game. And then even more so in 2002 then, because it's the whole Bleeding Beckham redemption show.
Of course.
But I remember at the time of this, the amount of needle in this game was unreal. And again, you're looking at the lineups in these matches. My God, the quality on show in this is just outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, as I was saying about, we did want to avoid, England did want to avoid Argentina, and ultimately they get Argentina. Now, the funny thing is, if you look back at this, just think what Croatia have become. As Phil touched on, what they become in this tournament, what they are now, what they've become to England as well. Ironically, there are nemesis now, and that could have started all the way back in France 98 had things have slightly turned out differently. But it turns out this is kind of the second game of a kind of trilogy against Argentina. Saying about remembering where you were when this game, I was actually, this probably put a bit of a smile on your faces actually, because I was in, I at this stage, having been to the opening game, I was actually on holiday in Lanzarote, and I was in one of those, most English of English bars that you can imagine in Spain, where the place was absolutely, bursting at the seams, full of England fans. And obviously when Michael Owen scores that goal as a Liverpool fan, I went absolutely mental when Michael Owen scores that goal. But probably what sticks out in this game more than that, for me, than the Michael Owen goal, is the how that pub went off when Sol Campbell scored that goal that never was. Oh my God. I mean, the place just went upside down, and then it took so long to realise that it had been disallowed, and the disbelief as to why it had been disallowed. And you almost felt like there was an inevitability there that England were going to go out after that was disallowed. You know what I mean? It was... I still don't understand why it was disallowed to this day.
But like, the thing that jumped at me in this, and it gets overlooked, the Beckham sending off happens on the 47th minute.
Yeah.
Shitebag Simeone.
The performance that England put in is arguably one of their greatest ever.
Yeah.
And it never gets the credit it does because they get knocked out on penalties. But you see, they go on to they were facing an Argentina side that has Batistuta and then they bring on Hernan Crespo. But we're talking about world-class talent coming off the bench and coming off the pitch to break down a touring England side, a touring 10-man England side. God forbid I ever give England any credit when it comes to these games, but like what that English team did that day stands up to anything that any English team has ever done in the World Cup. I mean, totally honest with you, they were brilliant. And I even felt a bit sorry for them.
They were brilliant, but again, touching on it, they played essentially with, you know, not a back five, because you wouldn't say Darren Anderton was an orthodox fullback, but they went down to 10 men, and if they were going to lose anyone, you know, not that Beckham wasn't, you know, he was an influential player, he was a superstar on the rise at that stage, but, you know, they lost a player playing in central midfield who probably wasn't a central midfielder, and they just sort of battened down the hatches, didn't they, and they really pulled together. I agree with you, Phil. I thought they were brilliant after that, after that red card, and it was, again, I keep saying it, but the quality, you know, there was no one hiding in that team. You know, it was a team of men, and I sound like Liam Graham Stewart saying that, you know, good men playing, you know, or Johnny Giles, you know, honest, hard-working players and all that, but they really were. It was an honesty of effort, you know what I mean? They were so blatant strong, and they pulled together. And you're right, against a great Argentina team. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can say, again, Argentina were a defensive team, but you have Batistuta and Claudio Lopez or Crespo to come on, but you have Ariel Ortega and you've won Sebastian Veron as well in there. So you could say, like, they're quite defensive, but their attacking players had a lot of freedom. And to withstand that, it, you know, a lot of credit needed. And it's a great forgotten performance by England because they went out, because the things that showing from that game, his own goal is Beckham's red card, and as raised on Saul Campbell's disallowed goal.
Yeah. And Batty's missed penalty.
Good old David Batty.
Yeah. Not only David Batty missing the penalty, but the commentary. I don't know if you remember that, well, I don't know whether you would have listened to the ITV commentary at the time, but it was Brian Moore and Kevin Keegan, and Brian Moore says to Kevin Keegan, just as he's about to take the penalty, quickly, will he score? And, you know, Kevin Keegan says, yes. It's almost like that Steve McLaren moment more recently when he's...
Oh, Keegan's just an optimist, isn't he?
Yeah. The Italy-France game is next, right? And it's a nil-all draw. It goes to penalties. And France get through on penalties, and that's probably the best. That's the best summarisation of that game. Like of all the players, all the creatives, you've got Del Piero, you've Baggio, you've got Zidane, you've got Yuri Djorky after that game. You know, it's just mad that it was that type of match where neither team made any real clear chances, opportunities, and it was just one of those games where they cancelled each other out, and it would set the stage for, was it Euro 98?
Euro 2000.
It was the final between the two of them. It was a vastly different final in terms of what was there. But as arguably the game, most people would even talk about the Brazil-Denmark and the Brazil-Denmark match. Was that the last one?
3-2.
Yeah.
No, so we're on to the quarterfinals now. Yeah. So that was Italy, France was the first quarterfinal. Argentina, England was the last, the second round. But we're on to the quarterfinals. Yeah. So we've got, there's not much to talk about that. But like then you've got two of the best quarterfinals. It's Brazil, Denmark. It's 3-2. It's madness. You've got Denmark taking the lead. You've got Brazil equalising out of 10 minutes. You've got Rivaldo then scoring. Rivaldo scoring the was it a free kick he scored at 25 minutes or was it? I can't remember which way it flows, but Rivaldo scores after 25, then Laudrup scores after 50 minutes, and then they break Denmark's hearts with Rivaldo scores again for 59th minute, and it's like you're looking at it, but Denmark kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, again, great teams, like, and I forgot all about this World Cup, you know what I mean, the quality that was in it, and Denmark had sort of, I forgot all about them, you know what I mean, until we're talking, but you're looking at a great Danish team, and you're right, the Laudrup brothers really were absolute quality in this World Cup at this stage, you know what I mean, and it was great to see them, you know, as you touched on, Michael's on the way down, but Brian is really, and I think he's playing for Rangers at this stage.
Playing for Rangers, yeah.
Really at the peak of his,
Michael Laudrup was having that Indian summer, you know, when you have that one great tournament, that an agent, like Maradona was going to have in 94, in terms of last hurrah, he knows it's his swan song, and he just gives absolutely everything to a tournament, and that's what Laudrup does in this tournament itself.
I'm a hell of a glad standing out for me hugely in this tournament for him as well. I think did he get moved to Milan after this journey? He was absolutely sensational, he was.
But you know, again, what the difference here is, one team has Bebeto, Ronaldo, and can bring on Danielson as a substitute. Denmark only had Peter Müller as the starting centre forward and brought on then Ebbe Sand as the replacement for him, and that in itself is the key difference between the two teams. So it's like you're looking at it and you say to yourself, if you're looking at what the difference is, that is the difference between the two of them.
The players look to the captain looks to the manager, and the manager looks to you. It's time to be heard. Pitch is the new app that gives football fans the voice you deserve. Get your views sent straight to media pundits, commentators on the club you love. From dodgy penalties to rating match performance, make your opinion count.
The manager's looking to sub him off, and the fans agree.
Download the Pitch app for free today. Be heard.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package, but that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated, and right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry, before they're all gone.
And then you have the game that this tournament is remembered for, and that is Holland against Argentina. Like, this is the, like, you've got everything that goes on. We know the final, what happens in the final, the whole lot, but this Holland and Argentina game, coming off the back of the England game, obviously all the English fans have jumped on board. The Dutch, they can nip on the ferry over across to Rotterdam and the whole lot, but this is like, you've got two phenomenal attacking sides. Going back to what we're just talking about again, and they just open up, but again, it's a tight affair. But they go end to end. I remember going, who's going to win this? I couldn't figure out who the hell was going to win this. And they just go end to end, and it's just madness. And was there two sending offs in this as well? One of the Dutch player got sent off, and then Argentina absolutely battered them for the best part of 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they get somebody sent off.
Oh, Taiga.
Yeah, Taiga sent off, that's right. And then from where then the moment happens, you've got the Frank de Boer pass. It is a Dutch centre back thing where they can pass as well as any of the centre midfielders or any of the attacking midfielders. Like it's Virgil van Dijk stuff.
It's just football, isn't it?
It's just beautiful.
You look at these boys from Holland or Netherlands, we've got a Caulfield. Only recently, I've been coming back from Ajax, and you're playing against, and I know we're going off track here, but playing against a kid, centre mid lads, and he was pushed to centre half within 5 minutes of the game. And I turned around to the coach, and I said, more or less, why? And he says, he takes too many touches of the ball. He's going to play centre half now for the next three matches. And you're looking, going, what? And you want to see this guy that's head and shoulders, pinging balls around. Guy is 12 years of age, and it just shows you how it all comes through in later years in regards to their ability, in regards to their how technical they are. They can play in most positions, and you just touched on it there, Phil. De Boer is a prophet of all that.
To be fair, anyone listening to this tomorrow, if you're not old enough or you can't remember this World Cup, if you get the opportunity to go back and watch one game from the 1998 World Cup, watch Holland against Argentina. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's just a great football game to watch. And the pace involved in it, like sometimes if you go back and watch the 1990 games or even some of the 94 games, it's very slow. This has a frantic pace to it. It's brilliant to watch. Germany against Croatia, there's only one thing to mention about this. This the Germans get absolutely thumped by Croatia. and not just they get battered. Like this looks like there's no words for this. This is Lothar Matthäus' last World Cup, and they're all over the shop, and it's not a great German side. Let's be honest about it, right? And even though they walked easily through the group, this is like they just get bashed. And this, as I said, this is where you get your surprise team in a World Cup, and Croatia. Yeah. We had Bulgaria in the last one, it's Sweden in the last one. This is the equivalent of these in this one here.
Yeah, but no one sees it coming. Still, I know you're saying they were a great side and whatnot, but. You know, Germany, a Germany in tournaments, and there was no real sign that something like this was coming. You know, Croatia, obviously, you know, we know what they are now, but back then they were completely unknown. And Germany have a man sent off after 40 minutes, which obviously, you know, has some kind of influence. But you know. Croatia 3-0, no one would have seen that in a million years, sort of thing. There's two things that you look out for as an England fan. You're always obviously looking out for England, but you're always looking at Germany, and you're always hoping that they get knocked out by hook or by crook. But that was just a massive, massive shock.
They had a very aging team, didn't they, in that World Cup game?
Yeah.
I started at the end of a cycle, Neil. I'm looking at some of them now. Kopke was 36.
Yeah.
Cole, I was 32. Helmer, I was 33. Olaf Thon, 32. And they all played in the 90 World Cup as well. Andres Mola, 30. Matthäus, 37. Kirsten, 32. Hasler, 32. Marshall, 32. Klinsmann, 33. Stefan Reuter, 31. Beerhoff, 30. You know, even Tarnat, Lehmann were all 28, 29. So it's a squad that were really aging, and they just looked like they were running on fumes after, you know, maybe peaking at Euro 96.
Exactly.
And then this was a tournament too far for them.
Yeah, but
that was an hour 45 tournament,
Keith. But this is it. You see, if you win a tournament like, you know, they did 2 years previous, then the temptation is to just carry on with the old guard, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the problem, a lot of them were there and had come to the end. Like, a lot of them were in the 1990 squad and were still there in the 98, you know what I mean? And maybe it was a time to freshen her up, but, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing as well, I suppose.
Yeah, did he Haman's in that side as well?
Did he get his milk to Newcastle after that, or was he at Newcastle?
Yeah, after that.
Right, so we've got now our semi-finalists. We've got Brazil and Holland, and we've got France and Croatia. Right, obviously everyone was expecting France and Germany, and Brazil and Holland would have been expected, or Brazil versus Argentina wouldn't have been. If that had panned out, I'm sure that all the money that was passed in hand, if you look at how that lineup looks like, you would have had France versus Germany, World War II repeated, and then you would have had Brazil versus Argentina, which is every Copa America that goes on ever. But we've got Brazil versus Holland, and this again, following on from the Holland-Argentina game, Holland are brilliant in this match, but you have the brilliance of Ronaldo. This is just a phenomenal goal he scores against Holland in this match, and it looks like Brazil are going to see this out until the 87th minute. Kluivert decides that he's just as good as Ronaldo, and scores an absolute bendy of a goal. It's a sweet thing, and then like that. Whatever, like outside of Larry White scoring the golden goal doesn't, like, I always got the impression in this that teams then become more fearful because of the golden goal, and they become almost more defensive. They don't want to they don't expose themselves too much, because if they do, they may get stuck and they may get caught. But then they go to penalties, and if England thought they were about a penalty shootout, they don't even come close to the Dutch when it comes to penalty shootouts, because they're just impossible. Like, if you want to play, you want to get a team in a penalty shootout, Holland is your man, because they're they need to get a few of the Irish over there, because we're brilliant at penalty shootouts. But like that, lads, like, I remember this and looking at it, and you couldn't pick between these two teams. You literally, there was nothing to pick between them, and it was too close, and that's how the game just pans out. And like, it's a good semi-final. Sometimes you get brilliant semi-finals. This is a good semi-final, and it's a very tactical one. But ultimately, Brazil triumph on penalties, and I think they win. They don't even get to take the last penalty. They win 4-2 on penalties in terms of what's there. Kaku and Ronald de Boer both missed the penalties, that's right. And Brazil, I have no idea. I'm assuming Ronaldo and Rivaldo scored, and then some random Brazilian lads that they found on the beach to scored bar penalty, and it was grand.
Yeah. But that was Emerson, I'm assuming the one who played for
Middlesbrough,
No, not the Middlesbrough one. I'm assuming it was the one who played for Real Madrid and Roma and where Leverkusen and
And then the other semi-final, and having started off so well, like the French side, I remember this game not being great.
Yeah,
totally honest with you. I remember the fear was that Croatia were such a good side that they may do damage, and they could knock out. There was a fear that that France, being the host nation, getting so close, but would miss out on what the final was here. And from memory, Suker scores directly after half time, wasn't it?
And
Turan scored right after, didn't he?
Yeah.
When Suker scores, I remember the absolute silence that fell across the Stade de France, and it was like it was almost like the world had ended. That's one of those sliding door moments. If Turan doesn't score so quickly after Suker scores, right? What happens next is anyone's guess, because if you look at how the French rugby fans get on their back when things aren't going right for them, that could have easily happened for the French.
Very national. Good point, because I'd say the crowd would have started getting antsy at that stage.
And
I think it could have been a different. I don't know, again, if your auntie had ball, she'd be your uncle, but I think it's, it is a great what if, because as you've said, you see it in the rugby, they do turn quite easy, they're an emotional bunch. And the fact that they just got back in front straight away just made all the difference.
If you think about France, you know, after they get out the group, they're not very impressive in the rounds after that, are they? They're scoring a golden goal. They're scraping through round after round, and then
penalties against Italy, and then. They nailed a 2-1 here. The Turan scores two. Like, you're not going to get you're not expecting your right back to score two goals to get you through in a semi final of a World Cup final, and that's after Larry White gets sent off as well, so he can't play in the final either. He gets sent off towards the back end of this game. That was the one thing I'll never forget, that, because remember LeBouf was playing for Chelsea, and the whole thing was that Barthez used to kiss. Was it kiss LeBouf said?
He used to kiss
Barthez' head,
wasn't it?
That's right. That's what it was, for good luck or whatever it was. And poor old Larry White was holding on to the best end of his hair that he could. I'm looking at it, and I'm there going, Givas starts, Trezeguet and Henry comes on, nothing happens, and the lads go through, and the whole of France is happy. I think Turan, I can't even remember Turan's goals. Like, I can't remember anything outside of anything that France did outside of Zidane at the final, to be totally honest with you. And I know Zidane did lots of amazing things, but Zidane's real World Cup isn't until a couple of years later. But like, this was the moment for him in terms of what it was. And they had Croatia, but like, that takes us through. Croatia get knocked. Like, I feel sorry for Croatia, because the lads did great. You know what I mean?
I'm sure they were chuffed enough with what they ended up with. You know, they win the third place playoff, don't they? They win the third place playoff. And Suko ends up as the Golden Boot winner.
He's got six goals for the Golden Boot.
So, you know, you go into
the fourth place playoff, and that's against. But like, I think Holland don't take that seriously. They're playing lads like Zenden and stuff like that in the tour place playoff, and they just go, yeah, whatever, that's grand. And then the Croatian lads play everyone bar, I think. Now, Prozanecki gets to play in the whole place, but that's about it. And then the final, lads. The final has two things. It'll be remembered for two people. And one is, this is the Ronaldo final.
Yeah.
You can call, like, Zidane makes the final, but this is the Ronaldo final. To this day, nobody knows what happens. I remember watching it on television going, what the fuck is that now? I'm just going, this is mental. What was your thoughts, Gar?
I remember the big Nike fiasco. Obviously, that ad had been the prelude to everything, and that ad had been constantly played throughout it. Obviously, Ronaldo got his couple of goals in a previous round, and you'd heard carry on from a hotel that morning that someone had been taken seriously ill. Then we heard it was Ronaldo and was pressured, and then obviously the aftermath was we heard that, you know, we believe, or what we're led to believe, is that Knight's pressure to pay him to make him play in that final was huge. Mm-hmm. And it ended up turning out to be an Adidas v Knight final, which was also a big thing back then, because, you know, but as you say, if it had turned out, you know, it was probably a bit of a downfall for Ronaldo at this time.
Keith,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with my team. This final was built up. I remember it as well. The whole thing had come out during the day, what was going on, and you just remember looking at it saying, "There's no way, you know, you're not going to get Ronaldo in this final," and you felt cheated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was just, is it going to be a real final? And I couldn't believe it. And when he came out, and he just looked.
Mm. Yeah.
Jesus, he looked like a shell, you know, and the other players didn't look good, you know what I mean? And you saw the French mentality in the last game that they could have went to shite when Croatia scored. And this was a kick up the arse that they needed as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, to see their main man like this, it was just like the bleeding, this is a shot in the arm that we needed.
When you see the talisman of your team looking like a shell, I remember coming out and there was the whole thing, and like, oh, I hope he's lights up the stage. I just hope he lights up, and this has all been rumours and stuff like that weren't true. But like, you could see that he was nowhere near what he'd been in the previous rounds, the knockout rounds, the group stages. It was really, really sad to see that, because that we deserve to see Ronaldo at his full power and Zidane at his full power, because on the flip side was, Zidane suddenly steps up, and when the true greats always step up in the biggest moments.
Yeah.
And this is just immense. And like we were talking, when I see the goals, when you see Zidane's goals in this, you never forget again what World Cup it was.
Yeah.
And what that meant, because it's just like, come at the hour and come at the man, and that was this was Zidane's announcement that he wasn't just here to make up numbers, he's now arguably the best player in the world.
That's exactly it, and it was one. It's a period, isn't it? Of they go into, you know, he steps up, and this hadn't been great in this World Cup. You know what I mean? He'd been sent off. He'd had a few moments, but you know, hadn't been what everyone expected. But when it comes to the final, he's the one that's getting the goals, and as you said, stepping up when needed, important goals at important times. Carries that forward into Euro 2000 as well. Scores the golden goal penalty, I think, to knock Portugal out, wasn't it, in that, and this steps up against England as well in another one late on. So Zidane is the player to step up at the big moment, and that's what we've seen, the birth of that nearly in this final. Which
the
is
volley in a Champions League final, Key, two years later, I think, the volley.
Yeah. And this is the beauty of Zidane. He just always, when he's called on, he always turns up, he always appears, and he always delivers. It's why he's such, people don't talk about him being in the top three best players of all time, but he should be in that conversation. Yeah. You don't have to be a centre forward to be in that. Like, he makes Juventus tick, he makes Real Madrid tick, he makes this French team tick, he carries a French team in a later World Cup when they had no right to get where he did, and he gets into a final as well. Like, he is truly one of the greatest players of all time, and deserves to be in the same conversation that we have around Messi, Ronaldo, Maradona, and stuff like that, because he's a legend, and this is his coming out essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in the lead up to the final, you know, Brazil were the big favourites, but even before the whole Ronaldo situation emerging on the morning of the game, I remember thinking, France. There just seemed to be something about them and something almost destined that they were going to win that World Cup in their own backyard. They haven't been great, but they just seemed to be, and they didn't have a striker who was scoring 5 or 6 goals and carrying them through the tournament. I think it was the margin and the manner of the win that was the big surprise. You know, a 3-0 win. Could have seen a cagey, 1-0 or, a golden goal or penalties again. But it was the fact that, and obviously the Ronaldo thing was a big reason behind it, but it was the fact that it was so comfortable, and it was, it was by far France's best performance in the whole tournament.
And it's also, people forget that neither Trezeguet or Henry playing this game.
Yeah.
Don't think they're on substitute. And Desailly also gets sent off.
It's still Guy? Flash, is it?
Givash starts.
And they brought on Christoph Dugarry.
Yeah. And Vieira. By the players, Vieira and Bogassian come on as well, and there's no way they're putting on 20-year-old Henri or Trezeguet in this, and
two goals up, and we make it stick, and then Petit scores in injury time as well, which to wrap it all up.
Yeah.
But, I'll go back to something Keith says, and I said we finish on this in terms of wrapping the World Cup. So Platini's admitted that they fixed the draw in the group stages, right? They said they fixed it so that they couldn't meet Brazil in any earlier phase than in the final, right?
Well,
so, and it's on record in terms of what's there. But it's a Moroccan referee who gets the game as the referee. And then I go back to, they're the only one that scores the goal to go. And, they have players sent off, yet they all seem to get through. To me, there has to be a bang of corruption of this World Cup. Because remember, there's 5 people involved in this World Cup. You've got Joe Havelange, Lennart Johansson, Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter, Swad.
Yeah. And he was FIFA secretary. He wasn't the president of FIFA at this stage. And you've got Michel Platini, who's the head of whatever it is. And
you've got Blazer as well, isn't he?
I was going to say, the last one was France got this off the back of a load of bribes in 1992, which was confirmed by Chuck Blazer, who him and Jack Warner were getting presents all over the shop from France to have a little cup of water by them. To me, there has always been a stink off this World Cup, saying, is it as clean as people would love it to be? It's arguably, for me, the last true World Cup that I enjoyed, because there was a lot of attacking football. There's all those great games we've talked about. It's probably the last one where you've got a lot of teams that have domestic players, in terms of Italy are all domestic players. You've got the French team is heavily domestic in terms of what it is. The Dutch team, a lot are still playing in Holland. The German team, obviously based in Germany. You've got all this sort of, it's the last real World Cup where the main body of the teams that you see in the later stages are the best of their own home league. And then after that, it just becomes very global. So it's probably the last time the World Cup is seen as the pinnacle of the game itself, because from here on out, the Champions League clearly takes over, and the club game takes over there. But there is an awful stench of fucking corruption of this World Cup.
Yeah, but it's mad. Like, if you think back to the time, Platini was seen as this sort of nearly paragon of virtue. There's no way he's corrupt. He's the ex-player. He's the saviour of football, and just mad how it pans out. It was like the axes of evil all got together for this one, wasn't it? Like, you'd named Havelange, Johansson, Blatter, Platini, and then the Blazers and the Jack Warners and all. I haven't really thought about it, but yeah, it's a stinker, all right.
It is. It's like when you step back from it, because it's just too mad. The whole thing is a bit too mad. Depends on what it is. Right, we're going to wrap this up. We've got 8 minutes left, and we're into a 2-hour pod, and I'm going to split this tomorrow and turn it into a 60-minute for the group stages and 60-minute for the knockout stages, right? But here's the quiz. Going to do something slightly different with the quiz. So, Ray, you're England, right? Keith, you are Argentina, and Gar, you are Brazil, right? So, if you know the answer to the question, share it with your team, and you get the first opportunity to answer the question, right? There's 5 questions. The winner is obviously the one that gets the most questions, right? Okay. Ray's gone, his battery's died, so it's down. So Ray's gone, so the next, we're down to just Keith and Gar, so we can just go Argentina or Brazil, right? So it's back to traditional wars. So, lads, 5 questions. Here we go, all right? Oh, Gav is jumping in specifically for the quiz, so which is fair enough. Gav, you're back. Are you in? You're in. Yep. You're good, man. Great to have you. And Ray is
back. Here's the go,
Mike. Back. Cheers, thanks, good luck. Right, Ray, you're back.
I just got me beer, hang on.
So, you're England, Keith is Argentina, and Gar is Brazil, right? So, the quiz is simple. 5 questions. Okay, right, here's the quiz. Cheers. Right, have you got your earphones in?
I have, yeah.
Okay, excellent. So here's the quiz, right? You're England, Keith is Argentina, and Gar is Brazil, right? If you know the answer, share it with your team, and you get the first chance to answer it.
Okay.
If you get the answer wrong,
yeah,
you have to sit out the next question, right? And we go until somebody gets 3 questions right. Right? There's no two.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it is, right? Okay, so first question, lads. 4 teams made their debut at this World Cup.
Okay?
Croatia, Japan, Jamaica. Who was the other team?
England.
Go on, right.
I'm going to say South Korea.
Incorrect.
We've got a choice between Argentina and Brazil. Who's next up?
I don't know.
Debut, yeah. We're gonna go Brazil. I don't know where most of this because it sort of went. I'm gonna go Norway.
Okay, so you obviously
need to know Argentina. Who's the tree? Who's the tree?
The three nations.
It's Japan.
The three qualified for the first time. Croatia, Jamaica, and Japan. There was a 4 team. What was the 4 team?
Tunisia.
Okay, no, none of us got that right. Move on to the next question. The right answer was South Africa. Right, okay. Right. Now, next question. Who won the Fair Play Award?
Argentina.
Go on, Keith.
France and England.
That's 1-0 to Keith. Well done. Next one. Right, who won the award for the most entertaining team in the Football World Cup in 1998?
Argentina.
Go on. Jesus, Keith, you're on fire here. That's 2 out of 3 now. Yeah, right. Okay, so moving it back, what stadium had the smallest capacity?
Argentina.
Go on.
What's the name, the stadium or the city?
The stadium.
Oh, fuck off then. The Felix Bolar.
You're out with this one.
Brazil, Montpellier.
Do you know what the name of the stadium was, Gar?
Having a laugh, no. I'm just going Montpellier.
That's why I didn't go in.
Do we have
the most fan of you?
Oh, would you stop?
Keith, you're out of this one. So, Garrett, I'll give you half a point for getting the town right. And Ray, I'll give you half a point as well, because both of you went for Montpellier. It was Montpellier. It was the Stade de la Mosson.
Stade.
Yep. Okay, so name the Scottish match official that was...
Argentina.
England.
You was.
Yes.
Keith. Well done. You won the quiz. You got 3 out of 5 questions. You literally were such penalty for you. I love you. Well done. Right, lads. That's been the 1998 World Cup. Thanks for joining in for everyone who's hung around for 2 hours. If you have, fair play to you. I am going to bed now and I will edit this tomorrow. There'll be 2 pods out. There'll be 1 that covers off the group stages and the 2nd that covers off the knockout phases. Gav is back. Gav, are you back? Gav is back tomorrow night. I don't know what the lads are talking about. And then there's also the Gav and Andy random chats at some stage this week as well.
That's tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
Excellent, excellent.
Make it a 2-hour one.
Make it a 2-hour one. 2-hour pods are all the right
stuff.
I spit wine around my floor. Lads, I'm in some trouble tomorrow. Right, that's been the club. I've been your host, Phil Casey. That's been Ray Dickinson. And he's almost got enough battery left to get him out through this. I've got Keith, who's been stuck in a constant pod. Keith, I have to say.
Donna, what's going on?
You look like, what was your man's name out of Love Hate?
The good looking fella.
Fran.
And that, of course, has been Gary Breen, the only man here who played in the World Cup 98 qualifier. It's been a club. We'll talk to you again next week. And next week, are we doing 2002 or are we going to start doing the European Championships?
Where was 2002? Is that Korea? Japan?
Japan, yeah.
Oh, this is Robbie Keane, isn't it?
This is the Robbie Keane World Cup. Well, there is. I'm going to have to dig out the 4th place song for Japan from FM 104 that I may have been responsible for. Right, that's been the club. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you all next week.
So I heard from my sister's friend's cousin that Kohl's has the lowest prices of the season and had to see for myself. For real, the deals are so good. I got my kids' summer tees for $5.99, a cute swimsuit for myself for $17.99, and a Stark vacuum for $199.99, which will be great after sandy beach days. I got Kohl's cash too, and I got it all in less than an hour with free store pickup. So yeah, summer, I'm ready for you. Select styles ends May 23rd. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
This message is sponsored by Amazon.
I want to get back to kissing the cheeks of my grandbabies, making Sunday dinner with a house full of family and lots of laughs.
COVID-19 has changed how we live and how we feel, but now there are vaccines. It's okay to have questions. Now get the facts. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org so you can make an informed decision about COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sports Social Podcast Network.